Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and thanks for joining me here today for episode number 348. In just a few moments, I'll be sharing with you an interview I did with Maggie Gannon and Heidi Connolly, talking about the power of doing a life review with people before the end of life. And that includes writing an obituary, telling important stories, and recording those stories for family members. And Maggie has created an online platform called My Living Obituary, where individuals can go online and create their own obituary before they die and include all the important stories and information they would like to have there. But this platform also has a separate portal that's available for clinicians and healthcare providers, such as hospice and palliative care teams, where they can actually help their patients record a living obituary and tell their stories. And it's an easy portal to use. It offers a slate of different questions that patients can answer and staff can help them record. And all of this is part of Dignity Therapy, which has been pioneered by Dr. Harvey Chochenov. So it's very interesting and a really innovative concept. So I think you'll enjoy this interview. So hang on. It's coming in just a moment. But first, a few really brief announcements. I want to remind you that I have another podcast. It's called What Really Matters, Everyday Spirituality with Karen Wyatt. And this is a podcast where I do all solo episodes, and I'm really talking about just how we get through life, negotiate and navigate the twists and turns of life, and the spiritual lessons that I've learned on my path, and sharing things that come up for me in hopes that they might be helpful for you. And I wanted to let you know that in the very last episode I recorded last week for What Really Matters, I talked about coping with bad news, where I shared more personal information. It's about a friend of mine who received a terminal diagnosis. And I wanted to refer you there if you're interested in understanding things that are happening for me that are more personal right now. I won't really go into detail about it here. And the week before, I happened to have recorded a podcast on Why Do We Die? That's part of a series I've been working on all year where I'm answering the most frequently Googled questions about life. And this is from a list that Google put out about what people are actually searching for, the kinds of questions people have about life. So I've been going through those one at a time, and I happen to answer the question, although it's not answerable. I didn't really answer it. I talked about it week before last in episode number 55, Why Do We Die? I just wanted to refer you back to those two episodes if you're interested. You can find What Really Matters on any of your favorite podcast platforms, but I will also leave a link to it in the show notes for this episode. Then I also want to mention that I'm now putting out YouTube videos and transcripts for every episode of End of Life University podcast. Not all of the episodes may have the actual video where you can watch us talking. It sometimes depends on the quality. Sometimes we're not able to capture a good video to put up there, but as often as possible, I'm putting the videos there, and there are transcripts available if you prefer to read the information that's being provided here. So again, you can go to the show notes at eolupodcast.com. Look for episode 348, and you'll find a link there to go to YouTube and watch the video, and also to download the transcript if you're interested in reading this interview. And finally, this is all made possible by my supporters on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. I want to thank all of you for the contributions you've been making for the last several years, which have helped me provide better quality and a better service to all listeners out there. And if you're interested in joining our team and getting some special bonuses, you can just go to patreon.com/EOLU, learn how to sign up for as little as $2 a month to become a supporter. So thanks once again, and now we'll move on to my interview with Maggie and Heidi, and remember to stay tuned afterward. I'll be back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I am so fortunate to have two guests on the podcast, Maggie Gannon and Heidi Connolly. So I'll tell you a little bit more about each of them. Maggie is a board-certified adult gerontology clinical nurse specialist who has focused during her 29-year career on leadership, program development, and patient safety initiatives in both the inpatient and outpatient setting. Based on her decades of professional experience, Maggie most recently created an end-of-life care planning technology to help palliative care and hospice teams increase quality of life and improve patient experience called My Living Obituary, which is what we'll be talking all about today. And you can learn more at the website mylivingobituary.com. And Heidi Connolly is an author, musician, intuitive coach, and medium who helps her clients reconnect with their highest selves and recognize that all of us are angels on vacation. She's the author of 3 books, including her most recent, The Gateway Cafe. She also offers writing and editing services for obituaries, eulogies, and living letters. And Heidi's an affiliate partner for My Living Obituary, and she assists people with writing their obituaries there. Heidi's been a guest on the podcast twice in the past. I can't believe this is our 3rd time, Heidi. And so I'm happy to welcome her back again to share in this conversation about legacy therapy for patients at the end of life. So you can find out about Heidi's obituary services at theobitwriter.net and about the rest of her work at heidiconnolly.com. So Maggie and Heidi, welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Karen. It's a privilege and it's a pleasure to be here.
Always.
Yeah, well, it's really fun to talk to you two because you have something rather unique to discuss that I haven't really done much on this podcast about before in terms of obituary writing, but more specifically, legacy therapy. And as we get started, Maggie, I wanted to ask if you would just tell our listeners, what is legacy therapy to begin with, and then digital legacy therapy that you are offering?
Sure. Well, Karen, legacy or dignity therapy is an evidence-based psychotherapeutic intervention that was created by a doctor out of Canada. His name's Dr. Harvey Shoshavov, and I think I just slaughtered his name. Forgive me, Dr. Shoshavov. So in the early 2000s, he works with palliative care and hospice patients, and he was really interested in how to increase quality of life with patients as they navigated their last chapter in life. So he developed a protocol where the care team performs psychotherapeutic interventions at the bedside that assists patients accept and navigate the approach of end of life. And it's grounded, the whole therapy is grounded in remembering who one is and conserving their sense of self or dignity. Because as people age, they tend to become sick or they're diagnosed with chronic illness. Sometimes they have pain and they sort of forget who they are. They lose their sense of self. So through this therapy at the bedside, patients are reminded about how much their life had meaning and purpose. And when they do this intervention with clinicians at the bedside, it helps to increase their quality of life, decrease symptoms of pain and things like that. This is done where they do a life review. So the clinician at the bedside runs through a series of questions with the patient, and the patient chooses the questions that resonate the most with them. And then they write about it and reflect. And it's a really great intervention for anybody in the inpatient or outpatient setting who's in palliative care or hospice care.
Well, I love it that your work is based on, I'll call him Dr. Harvey, since I don't want to try to pronounce his last name either, but his work, because several years ago, I did a talk on dignity at the end of life. And so I read all of his research extensively, and I was so touched and so impressed with the amount of time and care that he put into working with patients. And then also that he concluded and demonstrated, I think, what many of us know intuitively with patients, that they need to find meaning in life and in their dying process, but that he was able to state it just so clearly through his research and validate that is beautiful. So I'm just thrilled that your work is based on all of his research.
Yeah, it's very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very, it's thoughtful, and it's based in evidence-based practice. So there's clinical support for clinicians to use that show that it really does work. He wrote his first article in 2002, and since then there's been almost 500 evidence-based research articles to support his work.
Well, Maggie, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what inspired you to get involved in legacy therapy and to do what you're doing now.
Well, I became involved with legacy therapy for both professional and personal reasons. Professionally, throughout the majority of my career, I took care of head and neck cancer patients. And I know what it looks like to die well, and I know what it looks like when patients didn't die well. And, despite advances in modern day technology, I witnessed countless patients and family members suffer because the resources to support families and patients were inadequate. You know, clinicians didn't have the resources they need at end of life to do what they do so well. And at the end of the day, there was just a lot of needless suffering. So that was always resonating for me. And additionally, I guess, personally, the reason that I started this platform was because my husband in 2021 was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. And I was one of those people. We were one of those people who we weren't prepared. We weren't prepared for his end of life because we were young and that wasn't supposed to happen to us. Even though we accepted that death was part of life, we were not ready for that to happen in our own life. And we had the will and trust ready to go, but his life was so much more than a piece of paper with black print on it. And that's what really got me going. And I started looking into, well, as a clinical nurse specialist, I looked at the evidence and I came across dignity therapy because I knew, you know, just by talking with my husband, by talking with patients and have them share bits and pieces of their life with me, I could see that change in them. I could see that just by talking about things, they felt better inside. So this was a way for me to translate evidence at the bedside to really create a tool, not only for clinicians, but for patients to use even when they weren't in the hospital. So anybody can use this tool, regardless if they've been diagnosed or not, to create their living legacy.
That's such a profound story, Maggie, they say necessity is the mother of invention, but that your husband's illness was really the final impetus that made you know personally and professionally, this is what has to happen. I need to do this. And so now you've created something that can benefit so many people.
Thank you. And I love the fact that it can be used not only in, you know, healthcare organizations, and for patients, but it can be used for anybody who wants to do end of life care planning, because we get into this vicious cycle within our society where people don't talk about death. So therefore they don't prepare for it. And then they're caught like we were caught off guard. And that's how people show up into palliative care and hospice organizations not ready because they never learned that it was okay to talk about death. So I'm hoping that this platform not only can help somebody who acutely needs it, but it can help people who are just preparing for their last chapter in life.
And I mean, this is a really good case in point that even those of us who know a lot about death and dying, who've worked around it and been in this field, sometimes are just not prepared because as individuals in our personal lives, we all still tend to be a little bit in denial.
Absolutely.
So then, Heidi, you and I have spoken before about all of your very interesting work that you've done, and I was curious about what inspired you to start writing obituaries for people and helping them write their own obituaries.
You know, Karen, it's been such a journey for me since the death of my husband, as you know. And I guess what really just came to me when Maggie was talking, Maggie's the clinical side. And she came at this both personally and clinically, right? First it was personal and it became clinical. For me, it was also personal. And then it became even more deeply personal. In other words, I come at it from the side of connecting with spirit and playing guided music and all that. But when Maggie called me, she said, Heidi, this is perfect because you're a writer too. And you're right in the thick of things. And when Randy died, we weren't ready either. He had a year and a half. He was given 6 months. He lasted a year and a half. But still, if only we had a platform like Maggie offers, he would have loved it. He has notebooks of writings, that I still have. And part of the reason I wrote my books was to honor him. That's his legacy through my books. And so I know he would have done video. I know he would have put song in. I mean, he would have had Pink Floyd in there. He would have had, just all the things that he wanted to talk about before he died, that he wanted to leave to me. And when I needed to write an obituary, I didn't know what to do at all. It took me about 2 months. I was in a town where I didn't know a lot of people, but I ended up writing something that was profoundly personal. And I don't think anyone else could really understand it, but it talked about our relationship and how unique a man that Randy was. So it meant something to me. And I realized through obituary writing, when I started to do it with other people, for other people, that that's what we need to do. Open the discussion. Say, this is the legacy you want to leave. It's not about, I'm dead now. It's not about that. It is the celebration of life. As you know, Karen, it's that end of life quality. And so to have that platform just gave me this great opportunity to say, I can be a catalyst. I can be someone people can go to when the door is open. And I wish I'd had that in my life.
Mm. And it makes sense to me that this platform empowers people to tell their stories, because I've worked with a lot of people, I think, who they just didn't feel that they had a story worth telling.
They
never thought that anyone would even care about their story. And so I love that it's part of legacy therapy and dignity therapy to tell everyone, we all want to hear your story. Like, your story is amazing. Tell everyone. And that alone is so validating.
And to have a handle on that, to be able to do it yourself with help. I don't mean yourself alone. I mean, to go in and say, here's what I want to say to the people. Here's what I want everyone to know. I can express myself. And, all that is just this perfect venue for that. And it's so important. Everyone has a story. Everyone.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you that this touches me personally, because my mom, before she died, kept telling me, I have so many stories I want to tell, and I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to tell them. And I had met a woman who was, kind of helping people write their own personal stories. And so I hired her to help my mom tell her stories and write her stories as a Christmas gift. Beautiful. For my mom. However, mom got too sick. She was too sick to do it. And she died early in January. I gave it to her for Christmas, but it was too late, which will always, of course, haunt me, you know, and I feel the pain of that it was too late for my mom to tell those stories she wanted to tell. But that makes me feel passionate for other people and realize, like, this is a tremendous gift, but it shouldn't just be given at the very, very end of life. Like, we can give this to people earlier in life to make sure that they're recording the stories and telling them.
It's so important. My sister actually recorded my grandmother a few times, and we all thought, oh, this is just so uncomfortable, isn't it? But we have these recordings of her, these videos when she was 93, and we love them. Yes. We watch them over and over and over.
And Maggie, I know that this kind of legacy therapy, narrative therapy has been shown to help with quality of life for patients. Are there any statistics or more information about that you could give us around quality of life?
Well, from the studies that I've looked at, I think there was a systematic review, and it showed that at least with the quality of life, it improved between 60 to 80%. Actually, I have a little article that I can pull up here. There was an article with the American Psychological Association in 2019, and they looked at the myriad of effects of dignity legacy therapy in treating major depression. So there was a trial with 100 terminally ill patients, and at least 15 to 20% of all terminally ill patients are chronically depressed or clinically depressed. And after they went through legacy therapy, 68% reported they had an improved sense of purpose post-therapy intervention, which is significant. And I found it was even more significant that their family said, 81% of family members said that they benefited from the therapy too. And that's where there's so many wonderful outcomes from performing a life review with somebody, regardless if they're sick or healthy. In the clinic environment, it's a drug-free way that increases quality of life. And that's huge right now with the opioid epidemic. And, you know, who wants to be completely out of it during their last stage of life? I mean, if they're in pain, why not do something that's going to give them hope and comfort and take their pain away? I mean, it's remarkable. It decreased other symptoms of anxiety. It increased that care tenor at the bedside between the patient, the social worker, the nurse, the volunteer, anybody that comes in to talk with the patient. They're talking about something that's meaningful. And as a nurse, you know, we and anybody in medicine, really, we want to help people. So how wonderful is it to have an intervention where we can be the best clinician we can possibly be, and you're showing up with someone and they sense that energy, that's energy is going back and forth, that I want to help you. And just by listening to people, that's reflected on them that they mean something. We're increasing their value as a human being by just holding their hand and listening to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. So even for caregiver satisfaction, this is a great benefit. And it also, you know, back to families again, there's a huge benefit in healing and closure. And I was working with a woman about a month ago, and she grew up in the Great Depression in Chicago, and she was very stern, and she didn't share a lot of information with her family. She just kept things inside. And as she was going through these questions, it was triggering these stories that she remembered, and she was writing these things, some of the stories down, and she wrote of when I guess she was 6 or 7 years old, and they lost their home. And she came home from school one day, and all the belongings were out on the sidewalk. And when her son read this, he started to cry, and he said, "Mom, why haven't you shared this with me?" It created this opportunity for healing and to learn about, again, family history that she didn't want to talk about. Everyone has certain things that they want to talk about when they die. I mean, and these questions are so wonderful because people can choose what resonates the most with them. But there's opportunities just to share, this is a family recipe, or I named my son Hank because baseball is my favorite sport and I love Hank Aaron, or I want to tell you this now because it needs to be said. So there's, it helps people in so many different ways. It's the little things that, you know, for generations have been handed down. They can record it. And it's not only there for their family now, but for their generation to come after that and the generation after that. It's a permanent lifeline between heaven and earth, really, right? There's that bridge in between, and we're connecting people.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. And one thing I want to get into is asking you about some of the questions, but I wanted to go back to quality of life for just a minute, because I know that is an important indicator in hospice and palliative care and something that is being measured. And so I assume that your tool and your platform can be really helpful for those medical teams who want to show that they are paying attention to quality of life for their patients.
Absolutely. So hospice and palliative care patients are one of the most vulnerable patient populations. And that's because there's lack of preparation for end of life. So what happens is there's unnecessary suffering, unmet needs, and high cost of care due to discoordinated care. So it's a challenge to secure long-term funding for sustainability and growth for hospice and palliative care organizations. So in response to this, the big organizations throughout the world put out a call. So national and worldwide hospice organization says, we need more emotional and psychotherapeutic interventions to support our patients. We need more pain interventions. How are we going to do this? So they looked at all of their care guidelines, and they looked at core components or domains of practice, and they focused on patient, caregiver, and family experience. Because they thought, if we can modify and manipulate these, we can increase quality of life. So what they did then was a lot of national organizations across the country looked at that palliative care timeline, and they baked in the legacy initiative resource into the advanced admission assessment, that comprehensive admission assessment. So there's living will, power of attorney, CPR, the five wishes, which is different than legacy planning, and then also legacy planning and life review. So they're making that part of that timeline assessment because it's such an easy way to drive up quality of life. And we can use this platform to measure quality of life. So organizations can look at their HCAHPS scores, and they can measure actually what quality of life is before they started doing legacy therapy and after. And then as their quality of life goes up, their reimbursement's also going to go up. And additionally, because they're incorporating legacy therapy during an advanced care planning conversation, they can drop a CPT code. And unfortunately, it's like everything is not about money, but right now it is. We have to generate revenue to support our nurses, our social workers, to keep doing what they do so well. So this is a really inexpensive resource for them to use to help patients at the bedside to achieve their value-based metrics, to drive up quality of life, and to also be reimbursed.
And so you're right, it has to be demonstrable. Like, they have to be able to measure the quality of life in order to document it and put it down on paper and then get reimbursed for it. So the idea that there's a platform that assists the staff of the team to do that is really helpful, because on the other hand, who has time to sit and listen to the patient's stories other than the volunteer oftentimes? And so this helps the staff members make time for it and really emphasize how important it is and to incorporate it into their routines.
Yes. And you know, the neat thing about this is that this application follows the patient throughout the course of the rest of their life. So if the patient is admitted in an inpatient setting, they get discharged to home, the provider or the social worker who visits the patient in the home setting can pull up the platform anywhere and continue to help them. Family members can help too. So, you know, this can also be something that we can read to the patients before they're discharged, but we can also look at the family and say, you know what, you guys, if you want to modify this and continue to build this legacy, you have access to this site. You can edit this as you go. And the neat thing too is, you know, you mentioned your mom's story, and thank you for sharing that. Oftentimes when people are admitted to palliative care or hospice, they don't have a lot of time. So as a clinician at the bedside, we have to make that clinical judgment to say, well, can Grandma Smith do this? You know, is she coherent enough? Or is there a family member that wants to help too? And oftentimes there's that nervous family member who needs a project. So they love this opportunity to jump in and to help. So it's really a project that, you know, the patient can involve the entire family in if they so choose to.
That's really nice. Well, Maggie, would you tell us some of the questions? And then I'm curious from Heidi, how you might use those questions in helping that person write their story or write an obituary.
So on our platform, it's called a life review kiosk. And if regardless if you're just a user, if you're somebody who's planning for end of life, or you're on the platform for your organization, you would go to the life review kiosk, and there's 7 different categories. So there's questions about life's meaning and purpose. And you can click on that, and there'll be questions like, tell me about the most meaningful moment in your life. What was your most meaningful memory? What were some of the best lessons ever learned? And then there's other categories, family and ancestry, hobbies and sports. There's 7 different categories that patients can click on. And what we've been doing in the clinic environment is we're handing out the life review questions or prompts to the patient upon admission. So they're looking at this, and we say to the patient, you know, you don't have to speak to this now, but I'm going to come back, and you can kind of pick and choose which questions that resonate with you. And then we can start talking about it.
So that's nice. So they have time to think about it.
Well, depending on where they are in their
practice. Yeah, hopefully they have.
I hope we can start this upon day one in palliative care, and that this follows them throughout. But again, too, they don't have a lot of time, or if they're in too much pain, or their family members can always help too. So at the end of the day, the patient will always have the choice if they want to participate or not. Mm-hmm.
And so Heidi, do you use the same questions when you're helping someone write their stories?
So interesting. The first thing I did, and this was several years ago before I became part of the Professional Obituary Writing Society and all that. And people always say, well, isn't it morbid? And I find it exactly the opposite. It's not morbid at all. I did what I call the Living Legacy Workshop. And so many people came. It was amazing. And it was because they wanted to know what to do. And they, you know, people are squirrely about writing. So to reassure them that it's not really necessary to know how to write, it's just to have a format. So the questions are similar. Maggie and I put together a whole mess of questions that people can use. And my tips start with just get started. You know, every story has a good hook. Every movie has a good hook. So for me, if I were writing about my grandmother, let's say, an opener would be, my grandmother was tiny as a bird, but she had the roar. Her voice was the roar of a lion. And she was 90 pounds. And when she spoke, you know, people would just back away. She was amazing. Or for me, I might say, I'm such a bad cook. It was amazing that my father was a chef. That is not true. But something like that, you know, something unusual, something that really represents me as a human being, as a person. And then I encourage people to get really specific, to just start making lists, draft, you know, what sports, what awards, what nicknames did you have, what skills, what hobbies, physical characteristics. Nothing is too big or too small when you have such a platform. You know, in the newspaper, you'd get just 100 words or something to write about someone. In Maggie's platform, we get this huge opportunity to do whatever we want as much as we want. So the specifics can just be numerous, right? And then to finish all this up, you just tie it up with a bow. And I know that Maggie's platform will have media opportunities. So you could add the lyrics to a song. You could have your favorite poem read. And it could be by, you know, your son or daughter or someone you love. A statement like says, you know, what a legacy, what a life. I've lived, you know, every minute of it. There are just so many ways that people can express themselves. And all they need is a few tips. And of course, naturally, if they need help, that's what I'm the affiliate for. I'm the resource. Come to me. I'll be glad to help you. You could take a workshop, whatever you need. Hmm. Either self-pen, which means writing it for yourself, or for someone else that you love.
Hmm. I love that. And I'm sure that people appreciate so much having a guide through it. Partly because just the very word obituary is a little intimidating, I think. And so I can imagine like how wonderful that experience is.
Well, I'll tell you, when people come to a workshop too, there's a freedom in that. Because you could talk to hospice people, you can talk to providers, you could talk to patients, you could talk to anyone, but in a group, they're getting information and there's an energy of, this is more celebratory of your life. It does not have to be, poor me, I'm writing my obituary, or I'm, you know what I mean? Because that's how I felt when Randy died, just grief stricken. And I would have loved some lightening of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a good point, Heidi, because, you know, oftentimes death sneaks up and takes us by surprise. And, you know, when people are grief stricken, it's like they're hit by an elephant or a truck. And the last thing, you know, after my sister died from cancer, the last thing I could do was think about writing her obituary, you know, and like what I was going to say at her service. I had no idea because I was so grief stricken. And this is such a wonderful, you know, to pre-plan like this and do it ahead of time unburdens family members. And it gives people peace of mind knowing that the family members are off the hook from doing this. You know, they wrote their own story. And that's, just reminded myself, one of the other, complimentary services we provide on the website, which is what I love as a provider too, is that we're putting the patient or the user in the driver's seat during end of life where people don't have a lot of control. We're giving them control back and they can actually choose who they want to share their living obituary or living legacy with. So there's a whole section where they can enter as many email addresses from their dentist, the chiropractor, their primary, their church, the club or organization that they belong to, the Rotary Club, the bingo group that they went to, their alumni association. They could put everybody's email address in and notify everyone. And again, to unburden family members at a time where they're totally stressed out. Like after my sister died, I was so afraid. I didn't know. I was thinking, what if I miss someone? What if I don't call someone to tell them that my sister died? And it was horrible. Well, this takes that whole scenario out of the equation.
Hmm. Exactly. Can you imagine what it would be like to be able to stand up at an end of life ceremony? And I have played music at a number of them, to say, here's what this person wrote. You know, I don't have to say myself, come up with, I can even read what this person wrote, the message. I mean, I can channel a message from spirit, but this is the person's own as a human. This is their statement. This is who I was. This is what I want to say. Not if this person were alive, this is what they'd say, right? It's so present.
Mm-hmm. Powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. Well, Maggie, would you kind of take us through the website and how it works? Like if I were signing on for the first time, like what would I find there? And is it easy for people to use who maybe are not that tech savvy?
I've heard it's easy to use and I've designed it in a way that it flows. So as a normal user, there's there's two different scenarios. One would be as a provider or a care staff through a hospice organization. They have their own platform, and I can talk about that after. But as a user, for somebody who just wants to create their own legacy, you go in and you enter the basic information, and there's seven steps. So basic information is your name and date of birth. And then you go to the second step, and that is when somebody chooses a caretaker or executor. So after death, they put the executor will publish the obituary for them, and they add in, you know, the details of the funeral and the date of death. So the person will choose an executor. They enter their name and email address, and then we send an email to the executor, and they accept or decline. The third step is they enter any community that they've been a part of throughout their entire life. So their hometown, where they grew up, the community they were married in, the community where they spent the golden years of their life, any meaningful community, they can write the community down in the years active there. And then they can enter their schools, grade schools, middle schools, high schools, universities, any other higher education in the years that they went to those schools or organizations. And then the last community column is for clubs, religious organizations, any club or institution, alumni associations that they were part of. And all that information shows up in a nice chronological order on the obituary at the end. So it's really neat because, again, they're doing this life review as they're typing this in, mm-hmm. and it's reminding them, oh my gosh, I did this and I did that. That's right. I was an amazing author, right? So it's really cool the way that it works. After they enter the communities and information, then they start to write their obituary. So there's a writing center at the bottom of the page, and you can click on examples of obituaries. Then you click on the life review kiosk, and then that takes you through those prompts, and you take this little walk down memory lane, and it helps you to recall meaningful moments in your life that you just, you know, may have forgotten about. And then the third column, we have our obituary specialist services. So you can click on Heidi's links to either sign up for an obituary workshop and take a class, or you can have Heidi write it for you. If you just don't want to do it, you can have a meaningful, and Heidi, I'm speaking for you, but Heidi has a wonderful interview process where she can find the most meaningful things that somebody would like written that reflects them. And that's what Heidi's great at. And then after they write their obituary and they write it out, they get to preview it. And they take a look at it. They can share it with whomever they want to. So this is their living legacy. So this is an opportunity for them to, you know, not only appreciate, you know, like create the lifeline for their family for future generations, but to appreciate who they are now. Mm-hmm. I'm still living. And you know what? I've lived a great life up until now. And when I did this life review, I've had a realization that there's a few more things I want to get done. So this is a living legacy platform. And that's, I just think that's so valuable. And that just ties into the dignity therapy. Because when people do this legacy dignity therapy at the bedside, it increases their quality of life by reminding them how meaningful their life was. And it brings joy back into their life. And they have decrease in pain. They have an increase of wanting to live longer. So it's really neat how the platform complements itself from, you know, a user platform, somebody my age who just wants to create that living obituary, to somebody who's chronically or terminally ill.
I can see how helpful it is, because someone who's been dealing with a terminal illness for a while, or has been recently diagnosed and getting all kinds of clinical testing done and treatments, their entire focus has probably been on the illness. And so their identity is, I'm a person with this illness, and they forget all these other aspects of who they are. And it's so beautiful that through this platform, they can remember everything else that's so important about them.
Yeah, it's really, it is a beautiful, beautiful intervention for patients. And it's a privilege to be able to make it work, to translate it from paper onto a platform where people can just, they can keep editing, they can keep going back and remembering. And then after they die, that's going to be their legacy for all the future generations to come.
Hmm. And as you said, so much more meaningful than I think kind of the boilerplate obituary sometimes that ends up in the newspaper, which like we ended up doing for my mom because it's so expensive to put an obituary in the newspaper that we were really seriously limited on the number of words we could put. And I felt really sad because it was so truncated from what I would have wanted to write for her. So this platform is amazing and it can be as long as you want and include as many stories as you want.
Thank you. It is. It's true. Obituaries are so expensive. And, you know, you said the right, but I agree with this word boilerplate. You know, it's just like, he was born, they lived, and they died. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to our life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, isn't that sad? I was curious, Heidi, do you find very many people who want to do all the writing themselves, or are more people shy and nervous about that and asking for your help?
That's really an interesting question. I think it's a combination. I've had people come and say, here's everything. I want you to write it. And then they take it back and they sort of edit and go with it. And then I have other people who just have a great fear of putting words on paper. And so to interview them and guide them, it's the whole spectrum, Karen. And it's just encouraging for me to be the one to say, whatever you need. It's actually like my self-publishing business, because I say to people, whatever aspect you need, you know, it's being a consultant. It's saying, I don't need to do everything and I don't need to have you do it the way I want you to, just like Maggie's site, do what you want, do it in this way. I'll help you when you need help. Mm-hmm. And you're always in the same position. I mean, you're one of the most amazing people. You both are the amazing women I've ever met. I mean, you've been in this field forever. You've written beautiful books yourself. And to be of service in this way, people don't have to feel pushed. They can just feel inspired and motivated, right? And we're just there to walk beside them.
Mm. Yeah, so beautiful.
And sometimes people do feel more comfortable in a workshop, right?
Yeah. Well, so Maggie, how does this work for clinical staff if they're the people assisting a patient with the legacy therapy? What does that look like for them?
Well, there's a platform called an enterprise application. So each organization has their own web page and their own platform to take to the bedside to help with patients. So everybody is signed up. So any staff member can go to a patient's bedside and log on. They can either bring their laptop or they can use the patient's. It's whatever is available. And they essentially enter the patient and they go through the steps just like a user would on the website. And what's different is that the clinician then is going to lead them through the life review questions. When a clinician goes to the bedside, they go to the life review kiosk and they pull up the life's meaning and purpose questions, because that really is what we wanted to use. That's reflected in evidence-based practice, mm-hmm. to kind of like give this global meaning. But again, the patient is given a list of the questions in the life review kiosk, and we're going to go off really by anything that they choose. So either the nurse or the clinician, the social worker, they can start typing the answers, or if the patient's just talking, they can kind of just like type what they're saying with them at the bedside if the patient doesn't feel like typing it, or the patient can just start working on it themselves, and they can kind of just like help them and reframe some of the questions by saying, you know, like if, for instance, if somebody is asking about their children and they have three sons and two of the sons are, they're hard workers, they have goals and accomplishments, and the third son, you know, just never really wanted to work. So we kind of want to just like guide them through this process. The patient wants to say, well, I have a good for nothing son. You could take a step back and say, well, if this is the last time you've ever talked to your son, what are some of the things you'd like him to know? So you're kind of just like using the clinical judgment the same way Heidi would use if she was helping someone write their obituary or she was going to write it for them. And you're going to just help people reframe that story if they need it. And then they also would educate the family with the platform and let them know that they can have access to the platform to help their family member write this. And then kind of just explain how it works.
So very interesting that it allows the staff, any staff member, it sounds like, to help the patient. Anyone who has time can be there with the patient. But I like the idea that you guide the patient perhaps into viewing things through a more positive lens, if possible, because I just wrote a little blog about this, the concerns I have about when people ask patients what their regrets are from life. I feel like that in some ways it's such a negative approach when we say, what was the goodness of your life? What are the things that gave you joy and meaning and happiness? I feel like that puts the patient in a better place of looking back on their lives.
You know, that's a really good point. And oftentimes, you know, when I'm speaking with clients or patients and we talk about the box of, you know, what they're going to put in that box. And when they have this life review and they look back, you know, we all probably have regrets, right? So these regrets can all sometimes bubble to the surface. And, you know, people oftentimes can get really sad when they're looking at this and say, oh, I wish I would have done that. And when someone has replied, and this has happened several times, when they shared that they're feeling sad about doing this right life review because they wish they would have done things differently, I kind of just remind them that, you know what? Life is filled with good decisions, poor decisions. There's pain and there's joy. And it doesn't necessarily make anything bad. If there was a regret, that's not necessarily bad. It's just part of life. Mm-hmm. And to figure out how we can accept what's happened, that's huge. And you know, that can be somebody's journey too, before they die, is to find acceptance with things that may not have worked out the way they want it to.
Yes.
This is powerful stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So very true.
I can even turn it around a little bit and say, one of the questions I like to ask is, what words of wisdom do you have? To, instead of what regret, we can turn it around to words of wisdom based mm-hmm. on your life.
Yes, I love that idea.
Yes, instead of the negative side, you know, everything has a polarity to it. And instead of talking about regret, we can talk about advice, words of wisdom, things I want to leave you with. So things that I learned. It's just the other side of regret.
Do you have any tips to share, Heidi, when you're working with people, say for somebody who's writing an obituary for someone else, do you have suggestions for them about how to do that?
You know, honestly, Karen, it's the same structure because you want to have a statement like I'd say, my great-grandfather, we did the twist in the living room when he was 84 before he died. That's my incredible memory of him. And so I would start with that. And there are incredible obituaries out there where you write just an amazing thing that's your memory, right? That's the way to start. So that everyone gets a feeling of who that person was that you loved. And then expound. Do the awards and the schools and the accomplishments and the sports, you know, but that's not really what resonates for people. Mm-hmm. What really ends up resonating, even though that's important, and I think it's a great opportunity when you're not fighting with space to have all that. But in the end, what people want to know is the person, right? And so it's really the same structure.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Mm-hmm. Well, Maggie, talk to us about what kind of feedback you've had so far about the platform. I know it's still fairly new, but what have you been hearing from people who've used it?
Oh, thank you. I've had overwhelming feedback from people saying that it helped me say things that I could never say before. And just, you know, the whole part about the relief of knowing that they were organized. Because a lot of the people, mostly women actually, in their 60s, are a big user of this platform. And they love preparing everything and organizing. They're really into this, which is good because we're trying to change the perception of death in our culture. So especially after COVID, this is really catching on. You know, the days of looking at death by not looking at it, I think it's starting to dissolve a little bit. But they love the fact that they can actually be organized, say what they want to say their way, right? This is their life, their way. And one lady said, you know, everybody knows me as a teacher or they knew me as their mother, but this is fun because I get to talk about all of me. And that just made me feel like, oh my gosh, this is so great, you know, because she was just so into this and was just embracing it. And she said, and I don't have to worry about people not knowing that I died. I get to notify everyone that I want to be notified. There was a resident from one of the senior communities I was working with a couple of weeks back, and she too was really excited about not having to put that stress on her son and the woman who was her executor to notify everyone after death. She goes, you know, she goes, I was just thinking about this morning. I didn't know how I was going to notify people. And she was so cute. She loves Carmen Miranda. And and her obituary is going to be about why she wanted to be Carmen Miranda. I mean, it's the cutest thing I've ever seen. And just to know that I'm making all this possible, it's such a gift. And feedback from clinicians, you know, one of the hospice nurses I was working with, she burst into tears. And she said, I've been needing this for years. She said, do you know how many patients I could have helped? And that's the biggest thrill of my career, to know that I can help, that I can leave a little imprint and help all of my colleagues, you know, to do what they love doing. I mean, there's no bigger privilege, there's no better compliment than being able to help people in this way through this platform.
Wow, so beautiful. And it's so innovative, but it's also the perfect thing. And in some ways, it seems like so obvious. Of course, this is what we needed. But I think your timing is just right. People are ready for this. And so it's really filling a need and filling in a gap for clinical providers as well. So if an individual wants to create their own obituary, they can go to mylivingobituary.com. Is that yes, correct? And just sign in there. But what if an organization decides they would like to use this? How do they go about contacting you about that?
You can email me at Maggie, M-A-G-G-I-E, at mylivingobituary.com. And go to mylivingobituary.com, click on enterprise memberships or partners, and there'll be a whole platform there of how to contact me and information how this is an evidence-based practice intervention with all the details on how it works.
So that's great. So it is a work in process, like you're still adding things and growing this even as we speak. And then Heidi, it sounds like people can get in touch with you through the mylivingobituary.com website, but also through your website, right?
Exactly, exactly. And Maggie and I are doing our first Zoom workshop together for an organization in Colorado next week. So I'm hoping that it will be people, individuals, their families, organizations. You know, anyone can contact us and say, we need this or that, we want to tweak this or that, and it's for 40 people or 20 people or one person. So yeah, they can go to theobitwriter.net to reach me. They can go to heidiconnolly.com and reach me that way for my different services. And I'm just so happy to help in any way I can.
Well, it's really wonderful. And I've been so excited learning about this. And then also just thinking that it not only helps individual patients, but that it's helpful to staff. And I feel like this is a key to help prevent burnout in some ways for staff when they have an easy tool to use to improve quality of life for patients. I think that's going to change everything for them, Maggie.
Thank you, Karen. You know, I'm big on Florence Nightingale. She's my favorite nursing theorist. And, you know, she was always concerned with burnout back in the 1900s. And what she reminded her nursing students was, she said, every day you have to tune in with why nursing is your must. Why is it your must? You know, when you work with your patients at the bedside, you have to realize how powerful you are. And the normal everyday interventions mean everything with your patients. And, you know, by using tools that work, we're able to show up and suit up and do what we wanted to do and then be reminded like, oh, this is why I'm a nurse. This is why I'm a doctor. This is why I'm a social worker. And I agree with you. I think this tool is just that it increases that care tenor because people come in wanting to help and the patient can sense that. It all fits together nicely and people can perform these life reviews. They write from the heart and they have this beautiful living legacy when they're finished, the end product.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And Maggie and Heidi, I just want to thank both of you for taking time out today just to fill us all in on My Living Obituary. And I'm really excited to go try it for myself because I'm one of those people I should be doing that for myself as well. So
isn't it funny, Karen, because you and I write and do all that stuff. I mean, blogs and everything, but I'm going to go on Maggie's site and I'm going to do it for myself because I'm trying to make it so easy on the people who are, quote, left behind, right?
Exactly.
I'm just so grateful to both of you. I mean, Maggie, this is such a brilliant thing to do. It encompasses so much. And Karen, you have just been an inspiration to me for many years. So since I met you.
Oh, thank you.
At that conference many years ago, yeah.
Well, see, we're a mutual fan club here, but I'm excited to see where you go with My Living Obituary. And I think it's a much needed tool that's here at just the right time.
Thank you. I'll keep you posted.
Yes, definitely. Well, take care, both of you. It's been really fun to talk with you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Karen.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Maggie Gannon and Heidi Connolly, all about My Living Obituary, the online platform, and also the power of telling stories and helping our patients tell their stories and do a life review at the end of life. So check out My Living Obituary online and see what you think of it. Maybe you'd like to register and create your own obituary, or maybe you'd like to share this information with someone else who might find it valuable. I appreciate it when you tell others about the podcast and encourage them to listen. Also, leaving a rating and review for the podcast is a great way to improve our rankings so that more people can find this content when they're searching for it. And I appreciate all of you who have left reviews in the past. So go to whatever platform you happen to be listening on, subscribe or follow the podcast, and then scroll down and you'll see a place to leave a rating and write a review if you feel so inclined. And I appreciate that so very much. So until we're together next week, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear. Be ready for whatever life brings you next, because there's always something. And love each and every very precious moment of your beautiful life. Bye-bye.